Hello and welcome to Techsplaining. This is Brett Lonsdale and I'm here with the full crew. We've got Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie.
Hello.
And we have Mark.
Howdy.
And Rob. How you doing?
What up?
So Mark, I feel like I've spent the last couple of weeks with you in different parts of the world, Vegas, and also mines in Germany.
You're welcome.
How was that for you?
No, it's great. So, yeah, we were in Vegas a couple of weeks ago for SPC, and then we went to Mines, Germany for the European Collaboration Summit, which happens to be the sister conference of my conference, the North American Collaboration Summit. But I know it was a great time. It was my first time in Germany. Got to see people I've never seen before, meet some cool people. And I have to say that Germany is by far the most confusing language I've ever encountered in my entire life. So,
but you can order a couple of beers, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. But when every word is like, you know, 127 characters long, and you can't understand a word anybody's saying.
I've got a question. I've been confused since you posted this up on Instagram or Facebook, or so. I saw a picture that you posted, and it confused me. Did you buy or did you take tequila to Germany?
Jason Himmelstein brought tequila to Germany to give to Addis as a gift.
Okay. I was hoping that somebody brought it and not you didn't go to Germany to buy Mexican tequila.
No. No, and I'm typically not a tequila drinker, so but it was pretty good stuff.
That's pretty good tequila is what he the picture that was posted was pretty solid. Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of meat did you eat? Was there bacon?
You know, there was this weird smoked meat that they called bacon, but it wasn't actually bacon. Mm. And we had dinner over at Addis's house, and Addis is from Bosnia, so it was a Bosnian meat fest. We had cevapi, and we had some steaks grilled up. And one of the speaker dinners was actually at a Bosnian restaurant as well. So there's just a lot of a lot of meat to be had. I think I even posted a picture of that on Instagram too. So plenty of meat.
That and no awesome. Air conditioning. Right.
Air conditioning,
Was it hot?
Oh yeah, it was really hot. It was really warm. It cooled off enough in the night that you could sleep, but it was really warm.
So I stayed at Addis's house in December, about 18 months ago, and we went to some Christmas markets and so on. But yeah, at that time of year, I didn't notice there wasn't any air conditioning.
Well, I also learned that with Bosnians, and I hung out with Addis last year. When they did their conference in Croatia. But what I've really learned this trip was that anytime a Bosnian gives you time, double it. So anytime he said something would take 15 minutes, you would guarantee that it would take 30 minutes. So just something I learned.
Did Addis bring his Jeeps out? That's the most important question.
Oh yeah, yeah. We rode in his Jeep.
His dad's one Jeep now, right?
It's just, we just saw the one. I didn't know he had more.
Yeah, I think he got rid of his Grand Cherokee.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, yeah.
They just had the Wrangler.
Yeah. So does a European Jeep drive different than an American Jeep?
It's a diesel.
Well, they're coming out with those this year in the U.S., finally.
Yeah, that's because Europe's ahead of the times and they're getting rid of all the diesels.
Yeah, they're dumping all the diesels. Right? We'll buy those.
Yeah. Well, we're moving back to gas.
Oh goodness, yeah. So, Stephanie, what have you been up to? You've been awful quiet. And
well, I'm not the world traveler that these two are. So, I've been at home. I was out in Vegas for SBC, and since I got back, you know, it's summer schedule. So, I'm like a professional meeting scheduler and rescheduler, because you know what happens to projects in the summer, right? Everybody goes on vacation and you can't possibly find a week where everybody's available. So I think that's all I've been doing lately. I schedule and reschedule meetings. Really exciting stuff.
Yeah. I saw something exciting in Vegas with you too, as you rented a cabana. I've always wanted to do that. That looked awesome.
That was fun. It was my birthday and we had a fantastic time. Lots of people stopped by to visit. I had some nice gifts, some beautiful flowers, and shout out to everybody who stopped by because it was really fun. We had a
good time.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I finally got to relax after weeks and weeks of really hard work.
Well, the pictures I saw looked fabulous. So it looked like it was a great time.
Yeah, we missed you. It was fun.
Soon, I'm hoping for Ignite.
Hopefully we'll find out soon. Did you submit to speak there, Rob?
Or are you just going to go and enjoy? No, it's too, I mean, I could, but the legal stuff of having to go through with our legal team and Microsoft's legal team, because we're Microsoft's auditor, and there's some SEC rules that we have to comply with. It's just not worth it for me to speak at a Microsoft-specific conference.
To be clear, you're a legal risk wherever you go. So
I am a legal risk wherever I go. Yes. Yes. I think that's extra apparent at these conferences.
Well, Brett, you did submit our podcast, right? For Ignite, if I remember correctly.
I did.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah.
Puke.
Well, I hope somebody submitted the podcast so you get a chance to record a show from there. That would be cool.
Yeah, so listeners, if you want to hear us do an Ignite podcast, you know, tweet it out so we can retweet you and everyone knows, right? Maybe they'll select us.
I think the last one we did was on beanbags or something, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, we did it
on beanbags. We did a podcast on beanbags?
We totally did, yeah.
Yes, it was a lot of fun, yeah. It was
me, Rob, and a guy who blocked me on Facebook.
Speaking of social media, you had some fun on social media this week too, right, Mark? The Twitter.
Pictures
that you did.
Yeah. So in Vegas, Jeff Tepper announced SharePoint Spaces, which was virtual reality with SharePoint. And so I really couldn't resist. I couldn't help myself. So I took a couple of Ready Player One posters and I photoshopped Tepper's head on it. I posted those on Twitter, and then did another one that had Tepper and Vidya, who's on the SharePoint Spaces team, and stuck that one on Twitter as well. So if you're in a little chuckle, go on to Twitter and do a search for Ready SharePoint Spaces, and maybe you'll see it.
All right. So now the SharePoint Spaces thing has, the newness and the announcement and the big secret has worn off. So what are your thoughts?
Not quite grasping it yet.
My honest thoughts are that it's early to market. I mean, the market's just not quite there for it yet. So I don't think we can quite conceive of how it would be used in the real world. So I think we're probably, 2 or 3 years before people actually embracing that technology. But if you look at Microsoft, they have a record of coming up with something cool before it gets really embraced, maybe the hardware embraced for it. Like, they had tablets years before anybody else, but the hardware and the OSs weren't there for it yet. So it didn't really take off like they did. So I'm thinking this may be something similar to that as well.
I think it's the equivalent of Microsoft putting a Tesla into space. You know, it's kind of showing their innovation, which is a cool thing. But as to how that materializes in real life and in the workplace, not quite sure, not quite convinced yet, but I could be wrong.
Well, I still remember when I first learned about BPOS, right? And it was like, what? All this stuff in the cloud? Like, what is this? And it didn't make any sense. And that was how many years ago? And here we are, like, solid in the cloud with 365. So, they're definitely always leading the push even before everybody else is kind of ready to be there. So I think that's the space they need to be in. We'll catch up.
I hate it. I just think it has no relevant use right now. It'll be cool to see how it evolves and see if where they go with it. I'm really curious on that. But in its current state, and probably over the next 2 years, no way for me.
Well, I mean, sure, you say it's. I can think of two or three ways it's relevant. Will our clients use it? No. But the things they talked about, three, being able to look at the products and environments and walk around in there, having a new user site for new employees to come in and be able to actually see the layout of the building and learn how to walk down the halls to offices and get the layout. I can see some real world use cases for it. Nothing that, like I said, we're going to be using today, but to say it's useless, or don't think it's useless. You said you don't like it, but I don't think
the approach is useless. I'll say that. Let me rephrase. I don't think the approach of doing what they're doing with it is useless. I think the technology that they're using is freaking terrible. I'm not really a fan of HoloLens, and I really lost a lot of faith in HoloLens the first time I put on an Oculus Rift, was to where it's way more immersive, right? I think they're really lacking on the immersion. If you're going to enter a 3D world with all of this stuff, right, I think you really need to be immersed in it. If that's your
This SharePoint Spaces is not HoloLens. It is going to be more. It is VR. It's not augmented reality.
Yeah, but you know, it's still. But look at Oculus Rift and where it is now. And I know they can't start there, right? But I think that should be the baseline, because that me as a consumer, that's my baseline for what a virtual experience is.
Oh yeah, what SharePoint needs is a good zombie shooter. That's really what it needs.
No, but I mean, think about things like the think about things like the silly dinosaur demo with that thing, where you're in a huge room and you're immersed. This dinosaur kind of walks over you and stuff. Something like that, I think that blew me away, right? And that experience actually changed the way I looked at what all of this stuff is and where it's going. And I think until they can do that, they're not going to have me, and they're not going to have a lot of people.
You will be the dinosaur in SharePoint.
I will be.
I think what you're missing there is, if you can find a business use case for that dinosaur demo, that's kind of where they're going with it. I mean, this is using the Oculus headgears and those types of VR goggles. Mm. So I just have a problem really visualizing the big explosive wow demo that you can do with it right now with where we're at. Maybe my brain's just not big enough.
We've not seen the vision really of what it is they're really trying to achieve with it. That's what I think is missing.
You know, I think if you could do something, I mean, bringing Tesla back into it, right? If you could do an explode apart kind of Tesla demo, where you can actually sit in the car and you can pull different things and change colors and all of that, but driven by SharePoint, I think that would be a very compelling demo, right? Where you can do, or maybe it's a house, or maybe it's
why would SharePoint be the platform for doing that?
No, that's the point. Is I don't know how the technology would actually fit into SharePoint and where they're going with it. Now, if you're looking at numbers and graphs and stuff like that, that's cool, but I don't want to freaking put on a headset to look at a bar graph, see what my sales numbers are.
You don't have to wear the headset either, right?
Blah, blah, blah.
Did we watch the same keynote? Were you watching something else?
No, we did. I'm going to sit and watch.
I signed up for the preview, so it's an excuse to buy some goggles and see what I can do with it. But again, I think it's going to take one killer app for this to take off. But I don't know what that killer app is.
Yeah. So PowerShell.
That was a smooth transition, right?
I'm smooth like butter today.
Oh, you, Rob.
I tell you what. You know what? Last week I was on vacation, so I'm actually back, and we went to Disney and walked around. We walked over 40 miles at Disney and only took one day off.
Just went to Epcot is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, the funny thing, it monsooned basically the whole time we were there. And the longest wait we had in line was 40 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was a pretty good experience. We met up with John Ross and Randy Driscoll and their families, and we went out and had some fish tacos and drank a lot of whiskey, and then they sent us off to Disney.
Sounds like a good week.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. The boys, my youngest, Will, he finally decided he likes roller coasters, so it was full on now.
Well, I like them better.
I'm sure you do. I will tell him you said So for the listeners, my youngest and Mark, pretty much I guess all of our families, for the most part, I haven't met Stephanie's family, but for the most part, all of our families know each other. And so Mark and my youngest, Will, they compete at everything, rock throwing, paper airplane contest, whatever, shooting, it doesn't matter.
And we don't stop until I win.
Which sometimes takes a while, doesn't it, Mark?
It takes a while. The running one was the funniest when y'all were trying racing around the yard. That was great.
Was Will not the number one influencer in the SharePoint space?
I think that's what it was.
Hey, what happened there? Is that a thing now?
The clout gone, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's with clout gone, and I'm assuming clout was a big, I guess, metric for the numbers for the influencer space. I mean, what happened?
Well, so I haven't seen it advertised lately. I did find one of the old links, and the ratings are still going. So it's still ranking people. It's just that it looks completely different without clout in the picture. And like I said, I haven't seen it advertised lately, so I'm not sure the current state of that, whether it's kind of, yeah, I don't know where Christian's going with it.
It's kind of interesting because I started retweeting. I set up an if this then that to retweet everything Ann Michaels. Is that how you pronounce her last name? Ann Michaels does. So I retweet everything she says, and I jumped up to like number 16 immediately. I didn't do anything else.
Nice.
It's good.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It seems like it's legit. It's legit. 16. Yeah.
Have you put it on your resume yet?
No.
Okay. So PowerShell.
Yeah. So what have you guys been doing? I know you had some banter back with Vesa for some PNP stuff, and I don't know how many people are using this stuff. But I know there's a lot, and it's been probably within the past year or so I've really been following the PowerShell stuff that Vesa's doing. But also with the kind of the base PowerShell modules that are available from Microsoft. So I pretty much use those every day. I mean, we do a lot of reporting. We pull things out of the graph. We do a lot of tests and demos and things like that, provisioning sites. And I find the PowerShell modules, both PNP as well as the regular SharePoint modules are extremely useful to me. And I don't know if you guys have used them much, but they have really blown me away.
Well, I mean, for our uneducated listeners, why don't you explain exactly what PowerShell is and what you would use it for? Because maybe some people now are like, what the heck are these people talking about?
Well, I wasn't prepared for this one. But so PowerShell actually is an evolution of the command prompt. And it's a way you can actually very easily program and write scripts and code that do things for you. And the way I use it and the way I see a lot of like tenant admins in SharePoint 360, Office 365 use it is to schedule jobs and tasks to actually go out and either extract data or, do things in the tenant for you to where previously, if you don't use PowerShell, you might be going out to the admin console and say, okay, I need to create a site. So boom, I'm just going to go to the admin console. I'm going to create that site. And then it gets done. With PowerShell, you can automate that whole thing. And one of the ways we're doing it is we get a lot of, as an example, we get a lot of requests. And there's an app that we're currently kind of in building a provisioning system for sites. And we have an app that when they start a project or whatever, they need three or four sites created per project. It's like four. So it's like, we'll say it's one per quarter. So we'll get this request in that says, hey, I need my sites created. And then I've got a little PowerShell script that runs and checks a queue. And it just goes out there and, if it sees something, it picks it up and it processes it and it just adds these sites. And I was able to do that. I can host it. You can host it as an Azure function and it just reads a queue and then you pick it up and go. And so PowerShell really is, From my perspective, it's an automation tool that I use to essentially automate the mundane tasks so I don't have to go point and click every time I get a request for it. It's really changed the way I live and work, to be honest.
They're called snap-ins, right? For the different, like you can get a snap-in for AD, for SharePoint Online, for SharePoint On-Prem.
Yeah, so when you get PowerShell comes on every Windows PC. And what you have to do is you have to install these snap-ins. So if you want to use the SharePoint tools, you have to, set up and install those. If you're using MFA on, to log in, you have to install special tools for that, for PowerShell to work. So there's some setup that's required for PowerShell. And we'll have Stephanie add those to some of these to the show notes.
Absolutely.
But there is some setup required to do that because it's just a base. It's a dumb system. It lets you write basic code for the most part against your laptop. If you want to connect to other systems, you can install these snap-ins and then start connecting up to Exchange or SharePoint or PowerShell or Office 365, the tenant or Yammer or whatever. And it really works well. And the cool thing about it is because I come from a developer background is that it's the same modules. It's the same objects and functions and things like that that you would use if you were coding in C sharp. So if you're looking at, you know, and if you're a .NET coder and you're looking at PowerShell, the transition is fairly seamless. You just need to know how to do, you know, if statements and loops and things like that, and you're pretty much ready to go if you know those objects by heart.
I think too, it's very much an IT pro / administrator tool, even if you're not a dev, right? I'm not a developer. I've spent a lot of time though supporting servers, being a network admin in my past. It's very easy for me to pull up some instructions, be able to connect in and run some commands that I need in order to administer my 365 tenant. So, you know, it's also something that you shouldn't be intimidated by if you're not a developer, because there are a ton of tutorials. There are a lot of things that walk you step by step through how to connect, how to use the commands. And honestly, you know, there's some stuff out there that you have to do in PowerShell that you cannot do in the administrator GUI for 365. So you do have to get familiar with it at some point if you're an administrator.
You know, it is shocking to me how many admins don't know PowerShell. How many strong admins I know that are just rock star admins, but they don't know PowerShell. And I keep, every time I talk to one of these guys at work, I'm like, man, if I was you, I would play golf all day long and just have a bunch of scripts doing my business, you know, and that's it.
Well, the thing is, like, there's a lot of the admins are really concerned when people going to the cloud and what am I going to be doing all day? And it's like, you need to learn PowerShell. You need to learn what that opens up for your world, because if you want to be quickly invaluable to your company, become a PowerShell expert and really take control of your environment and automate things and create processes. One of our clients, we created this really big PowerShell script. And one of the cool things about PowerShell is you can actually execute client-side object model code within your PowerShell as well. Mm. So this client has all of their SharePoint sites, but they add AD groups to their SharePoint sites. So they have no easy way of knowing which users have access to which sites. So we wrote a PowerShell script that went and created every single SharePoint site they had, read the AD groups out of those sites to see what permissions they had to those sites, and then it queried AD to say, now give me the users for those AD groups. And it spit out a spreadsheet of, here's all your sites, all the people, and here's what access they have to everything in your environment. And it was all done with PowerShell.
Yeah, and I think that's, and doing things like that, like exporting a CSV or importing a CSV or reading JSON, all that stuff, there's out of the box methods that help you do that. I mean, it's just, it's so seamless. Everything, I've not found anything that I need to do that I can't do in PowerShell. I mean, it's transformed the way I work completely. Yeah.
Well, you never have to log into SharePoint. I don't have to open up my browser, log into SharePoint. It's all done from the command prompt. So it's
Yeah, it's great. Now there are other, I guess, once you get beyond the snap-ins, right, the Microsoft-provided snap-ins, and they're great. And don't get me wrong, how you connect to Office or to SharePoint, as an example, how you query things like the graph, you know, doing all of those things, very easy to do. You can grab it, you can pull things out. There is a patterns and practices library that I know you've recently been tweeting about, Mark, and what do you think about that?
So this pattern and practices library that's been put together by the patterns and practices group headed by Vesa, and I'm not even going to try to say his last name. It's a specialized group of functions for things that we want to do that don't exist within the SharePoint Online PowerShell. And it's usually around site maintenance, site creation, a lot of stuff with the new modern sites. There's a lot of functionality in there for that. So one of the things that I used it for was that we had a client who was using hub sites. And oh, by the way, if you want to create a hub site today, I think PowerShell today is the only way to even create a hub site. So if you don't know PowerShell, you cannot have a hub site right now. But we created a hub site for this client, and they have a bunch of plants. Right now, that's 20 plants that they want to have set up as sites of a specific site design attached to that hub site. So using these site designs, you can basically create a site using a JSON object and automatically attach a site to a hub site when you create that site. And they use PowerShell to actually create the site design and get it installed in your system. Well, after I had this site design out there for a couple of weeks, the client came back with a bunch of new requirements for all these sites. And I had 20 sites deployed. And like, oh, we want to add another field that's a choice field to all these lists and libraries. And so if you kind of think about that, you got all these sites out there and you want to quickly update them all. There's some processes you can go through with standard PowerShell, but it's a little verbose. So it would take a little bit of time. Well, with the patterns and practices, there is a command that you can actually invoke an updated site design very quickly from PowerShell and update a site design with an updated template. So I was able to do something I thought was going to take me most of a day to do, and I was actually done in like 20 minutes. So I updated the site design, and then I invoked the PMP script to say, now update all these URLs with this updated site design, and they just all had those updated libraries. So it was... it literally gave me my whole day back. So yeah, I was happy about it.
Now, what do you know how long it would have taken to do it without the PMP stuff?
I started going down that path without PMP, and there's options. So there's other options besides PowerShell for doing a lot of this site design stuff. There's some REST you can execute, but you've got to get your environment set up for that. You can't just execute a REST query. I've got to write a script and I've got to deploy it in some way where I can execute it in SharePoint. Where again, with PowerShell, you're executing it from the command line. But there was not a clear path to update 20 sites with the updated site design as quickly as I found with the patterns and practices, where I could do it with one PowerShell script, copy and pasted, you know, the same command for the different URLs 20 times, executed, and it was just done.
You know, and it's little things that I think the PMP stuff does that I find tremendous value in. And it's just basic stuff like, give me all the items in this list and let me cycle through that or whatever, right? I mean, it's little things like that just change everything, right? Because I can do that with the Microsoft libraries. Absolutely. It takes me about 50 more lines of code instead of this one get PNP SP list or whatever. Get PNP list, I guess is what it is. That one command you could do with 50 other lines of code, but it's just one command and you're in and out, and it's just perfect.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's also very much community driven. I remember when I first started looking at this, PowerShell was trying to create a site design or update a site design. And I was looking at the documentation and it kept bombing on me and I couldn't figure out why. So I reached out to Vesa and I said, is this broke? Am I doing it wrong? And the problem was, is I was trying to use a modern team site and not a communication site. Hmm. Well, for a communication site, you specify the URL. For a team site, you don't specify the URL, but the documentation wasn't clear on this. And, you know, Vesa's response when I brought that up was, please get involved and update the documentation. I mean, so they're very much, if you want to get involved with this, this is something that they would love to have people's help on, to update documentation, to do different things. So,
you know, I'm sorry, Stephanie, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say something that's important too, is that to go out and don't be afraid to ask questions and post that stuff, because what actually happened within our team was that Mark was working on a project and had posted out to get some assistance online. And then later on, the same question came up with our team and someone on the team found Mark's post and they were like, oh, they hadn't even talked to Mark yet, but they had gone out to find the answer and saw it posted. So you're not just helping yourself, you're helping others too. And if you're asking the question, someone else will ask the question. So I thought that was funny, because it happened even within our own team, because it happened so fast, we hadn't even communicated across the team yet.
Yeah, that was probably just Mark delegating his work off to somebody else.
No, I work very hard all the time.
One thing I really love about that team, and I think they've done a tremendous job at this, is they have a monthly call. I think it's monthly call they have where they do the updates of here's what's new, here's what's coming out, here's what's changing. And then they solicit feedback from the community. So anybody can join this call and talk directly to these guys that own this thing. And that's so valuable, so valuable.
Yeah, and they record them so you can go back and watch them. Yeah. I guess it's a really great team, really great group of guys. And except for that Waldeck, he's kind of mean. But.
we love Waldeck.
We do.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, I guess kind of summarizing the PowerShell thing is, you know, I find tremendous value in it. I think as an admin, if you were a full-time administrator, we're well beyond the point of you needing this as a skill. You have to have this as a skill, you know, especially as more and more things move to the cloud. You're not going to be touching and twisting knobs on servers and physically touching these things. Not that we have that much anyway in the recent past, but the way you're going to do that and the way you're going to be a valuable asset to your company as an administrator is through PowerShell and really getting control of your environment through these scripts. I mean, it's really the only way, or it's the most optimal way to do what you do. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in admin tools, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to do anything where you need to automate some tasks, like you said, schedule tasks, automate tasks, do some real-time auditing of your environment and get some information pulled back. And like I said, if you have a client who says, oh yeah, or someone in your company that says, we have these 2000 sites out there that all use this content type and we need you to go through or have a list. We need you to go through and update every single one of those sites, you know, look at using PowerShell to do mass updates like that. Cause it's very easy at that point to go through and do that.
A simple way I'm using it right now, and I use this basically twice a month now that I've got it all kind of refined, is we're extracting usage reporting out of the graph to pull that in. It gets imported into Power BI. Graphs are built. We can see how our people are trending over time and doing all that. And it's really PowerShell is the only way we're doing it. It's we're pulling it out. We're putting it into CSVs. We're importing those CSVs into Power BI.
And there's a lot of scripts out there too. So just this week, that same client that had those 20 sites, they have 3 document libraries per site, and they decided that no, we want content approval turned on for all those document libraries. So how do you go through for those 20 sites, 3 document libraries per site, and turn on content approval? Mm-hmm. Well, there's a PowerShell script out there that does that. And it actually iterates through all those sites and looks for the document libraries and turns on the content approval for all those document libraries. So and it was already written. So I just ran it and it did it all and I was done.
Copy paste done.
Yeah. And I got my whole day back again. So yeah. It's good stuff. That's how I had time to create those pictures of Jeff Tepper. Stephanie is rolling her eyes right. I swear it didn't take that long.
Oh, that's great. That's great stuff. I mean, it really is good. You know, Stephanie will update the show notes and get that out, and you know, so we can post links to all this stuff for sure.
Yeah, you know, I just pulled up the kind of the information page on PowerShell and like a getting started. They have a really nice layout now, and it's, you know, kind of modules, get started with PowerShell, set up an installation, tutorials, PowerShell and GitHub. So they really, you know, kind of section that out well and provide you a lot of information. So if you are trying to get started, I'll put the link out there, but it's just docs.microsoft.com/, and if for English, of course, en-us/PowerShell. So super easy to find, but lots of really good info out there. And that's something I feel like Microsoft's doing a better job at now, is getting us information that we need. And sometimes it is a little slow going. I know when the stuff's brand new, it takes a little while to get it out. But there's a lot of stuff out there now for PowerShell to get to know it.
Well, and you can spend 30 minutes a day of your day, and within a month, you'll be well on your way to using it every day.
Once you use it a couple of times and get some value out of it, you will continue to use it. Another thing for people, Visual Studio Code does have a PowerShell console built into it as well. So you can actually create your PowerShell scripts in Visual Studio Code and then run them from the console window there in Visual Studio Code as well.
You get IntelliSense too. So when you press dot, all the object properties come down and the methods, and it's really great.
Yeah. Brett, totally tell your boss how easy it is.
Like you touched on, Mark, the documentation that Microsoft is producing now is far better than it was. And whenever there are issues in it, it is a community effort to put that right. And you have a look at the column formatting documentation that you were referring to, and I was. At first, there were issues with it, but people like Mark Anderson and so on, yeah, they provided fixes, and it was brought right up to speed. So you no longer have those issues where you try and code and it just doesn't work. It's They've done an outstanding job of that.
Yeah. So, okay, to just kind of wrap things up, I do want to reiterate what Rob said. If you are an admin for your SharePoint Online environment, for Office 365, heck, SharePoint On-Prem, maybe even Microsoft technologies in general, if you are an admin, you need to learn PowerShell. You need to go out there and see what's available, look at some sample scripts, learn it. It's going to make your life easier. It's a great resume fodder. And it's going to really improve your day-to-day job. So do it. Just do it. But otherwise, thanks everybody for joining us and listening to us again. As always, we are Techsplaining with Brett, Rob, Stephanie, and myself. If you have any questions you'd like to send our way or any show suggestions, you can shoot us an email at info@techsplaining.net. And thanks again for joining us.